evening, Uniona, or good morning or good afternoon. Perhaps you're on your way to Madrid. Who knows? Yes, it is that time. It is the precursor to Union traveling to the Bernabeu. Don't quite believe it, I must say. We've had the BBC, we've had The Athletic all asking for the international speaking Uniona to give our view. The podcast is the place we'll be doing it this evening. First of all, we will look back at the weekend. Not the greatest result. Started brightly, faded, and never really got going again after that. In the podcast studio today, we have the return of Andrew Cherry, the freelancer, who has been obviously working very, very hard, but has squeezed us in for an hour. Hope it's not billable, Cherry.
Yeah, no, I will be charging my usual rates for this.
Good to know, good to know. Jameson, Mark, you're here from Berlin as always. And Baz Timmers joining us from a hotel in Braunschweig, I believe. And Kyle is always on duty. First up, Kyle, the weekend. What did you make of it?
Just one of those games that happens sometimes. You get a freak goal, like conceding a freak goal and then get ourselves back into the game, but just switch off for a second, you know, and we're behind again and we're chasing the game and just can't get back in terms. It's not the first time it's happened. It won't be the last time it happens to every team in football. So nothing much that can be done about that. I did think the first goal we conceded was a pretty poor situation. There was no players were out of position due to the pass to play, and there was no option for Behrens to play a pass to someone and then to lose the ball, unfortunately. And after that, it was like a fantastic finish from Jonas Vind, but yeah, just a sloppy bit of play. Great goal to get back in the game. Cracking cross from Lyduny, and Gosens has been again superb, but like his attacking play and his goal contributions is not something I maybe expected, so that's been a nice surprise. I think over the course of the game, I guess Wolfsburg just had our number. You know, they pressed Behrens a lot to the point probably where he was out of the game, and that makes things quite difficult when you don't have the likes of Fofana and that getting much getting into the game and kind of help make a difference. Yeah, a shame, but look, we move on. We've got bigger fish to fry this week.
And just picking up on that point you made about that kind of pass into Behrens, I mean, Kral gave him a bit of a fucking zinger, didn't he? And I mean, I know you could probably say a professional footballer might be able to control that, but you're also intimating as well. He was a bit boxed in. I mean, he had nowhere to go. And yeah, maybe. What do you think of Kral so far? Because I know just sort of monitoring the WhatsApp group and a few exchanges I've had, he certainly is someone who I think divides opinion, would be fair to say.
I think he was more due to be bedded in, but has sort of been thrust into the limelight with Khedira being out. If there was a bit more of time for him to bed into the system and how players work and stuff like that, then great. But I don't think it's a massive issue at the moment. You know, one stray pass, every player plays a stray pass in a game, unless you're Jude Bellingham at Hampden last week. He was incredible. But it happens. I think Kral will offer a lot to us going forward. It's just a shame that everything's maybe just a bit quicker in terms of his timeline and playing in the team and stuff than we maybe had planned.
I think that what Kyle says is absolutely true, that we're missing Khedira a lot, not only because of that decisive work just at the end of the box, that third between the box and the halfway line. He just keeps things ticking in a way that Kral doesn't yet. I think he will get there, but I think it's just you really do realise how much you miss Khedira when he's not playing, because everything else just doesn't seem to run in time, if you see what I mean. Parts of the team for me are not gelling really, which is to be expected at the beginning of a season. I mean, obviously that they are new players, new surroundings. Fofana is one example of this. He hasn't played at this velocity, I think, so much before. I think they want him to almost play in a Becker role, but he isn't the same type of player as Becker. Becker gets the ball ahead of him and runs, whereas Fofana gets the ball and tries to dribble around people. They're both fundamentally different players, I think. And Fofana, I think, just doesn't seem to fit in with the way that we want to play at the moment. The question that I would say is that if Behrens is shackled, as he was against Leipzig as well, do we have a plan B? In terms of that, because we saw how much of a focal point Behrens was last year with the Flicks, and I suppose you could have brought Jordan on for that role if we wanted to keep it the same way. I just feel like the other two forwards, I feel like Hollerbach and Kaufmann are not quite there yet. That's more of a development project. Do we have a plan B for when we go behind? I don't think that we quite do at the moment.
I think the plan B, and I think we picked up on it in the chat during the game, was sort of Aaronson coming on and playing in between the lines rather than just looking for the direct ball up to Behrens each time. Seemed to be what we were missing a little bit going forward as well. And it sort of nearly paid off towards the end, Becker with his absolutely glaring miss. But that came from sort of a little bit of creativity from Aaronson getting in between the lines and picking the ball up and then playing it and finding the space. Because I think at the minute, teams have just sussed this out. Like you say, the plan B isn't really evident. And again, at the weekend, it was quite uncharacteristic, really, in that we didn't look particularly assured at the back. And I think that is the Khedira effect again. So the centre backs didn't really have an outlet and they got a bit panicky. And then that sort of fed in. And then throughout, we just didn't look as assured at the back as maybe we did last season, the past few seasons. So yeah, that what the plan B is, I think we need to work that out. I think it's just going to have to come naturally. I don't think we really have that right now, but we're also just not doing the basics good enough. So the plan A is fine and it works if we stick to it and if we do the real basics well, which is, you know, how we've got to where we are now. And that just wasn't happening in the weekend. We were flapping a little bit. The second goal, I think that Runa was flapping at the near post and came to punch. Everyone was getting in each other's way, and there was just sort of that lack of assurance at the back, and that's where we went wrong. So yeah, I think let's stick to plan A for now and just get a bit better at doing the basics right.
And if just following on from that, you said that we're not looking as assured at the back, and I agree with that. Now we've got the Italian captain here. He's not come here to sit on the bench. At what stage do we think about making a change at the back? And if we do make a change at the back, who sits out?
Only for the top games against Real Madrid, of course. I mean,
Oh yeah,
that's
it's like
obvious when we
champ
need him.
manager. We've got champ manager 0102, have we? With just like specialist Champions League players, have we? Yeah, we're that good now.
Exactly. I must say though, the easy explanation is that Khedira is missing. I think that is part of the problem. I also have the impression that we're in a kind of a transitional phase when it comes to playing style and the expectation of opponents, that we are learning to play in a more dominating way. When Gosens came, he explicitly stated as well, like, hey, we want to go to away games with the attitude like, hey, Union Berlin is coming, and this is going to be a tough home game for us. I think you could see that it stretches against Wolfsburg as well, that we're trying to play a more active, proactive game. And yeah, the different parts of that puzzle are not fitting yet, but I think it's just a very normal phase for a team like us to grow, to become better at playing dominant football, at playing technical football. I had to think of that as well when I was watching Freiburg. Freiburg used to play, let's call it the ugly game as well, when they were playing in the old little stadium a couple of years ago as well, and they didn't have the means as well. You can now see that they've become an established side in a bigger stadium, that they play a much more beautiful game. And I think we are actually in the stage of coming from our slightly boring and defensive way of playing football, some call it terror football, to, you know, playing something that is nicer to watch but is more difficult to execute as well, and where we might need a bit more time to get everything on track again.
Yeah, sorry to steal Kyle's thunder here with some stats, but I just thought I'd look this up. So looking at that, and Baz 100% correct, like, we far more completed passes the Wolfsburg in the game of the weekend, 500 odd to Wolfsburg's 390. Completed passes far more. And then I checked out the same stats from the 1-0 draw there earlier in this year, so last season. And we had 150 fewer completed passes than they did in that game. So we've gone from 150 fewer passes to 150 more passes in exactly the same game in the space of a few months. So, yeah, I think that it's clear that we are going through that, and it's going to take time to adjust to that new way of playing.
And when you look at the stats, one of our favourites is always how far did they run? And we're still outrunning every fucking team we play. We are never outrun. Real Madrid may do something to us, but I doubt they will outrun us. We may be doing a lot of running at the Bernabeu, but that'll be another story. So, is it fair to say, start with you, Baz, obviously we've had a couple of bad defeats in a row, as in we haven't had two defeats in a row for a very, very long time. The midweek fixture will be tough. We've got a tough home game coming up, which we can preview as well later on in the podcast. But you don't seem concerned. It's more, this is a transition. People are sort of saying, well, this is to be expected. We're bedding in players. We're not even to our magic sort of let's look at the league table after 10 games stage, which we like to do. Give it 10 games and see where we are. We're in a hell of a better position than many other clubs are at this stage. So is it all is well? It's just a few things that need fine tuning.
It depends, of course, on your expectation levels. But my expectation level, I think, is the same as Urs Fischer, which means, like, let's just be mid-table, have nothing to do with relegation. And in that sense, there is absolutely nothing to worry, because the quality of our squad and the quality of the play that we are even displaying at the moment is far above that of Augsburg, Mainz, Darmstadt, Heidenheim. With all respect to those teams, but we are literally our own compared to those, at least. So the worst thing that could happen is that we're going to end in a 10th or 12th place in this season of adjustment. And I'm actually quite confident that it's not even going to come that far.
Kyle, one thing that people often mention as well when you're in this sort of transitional phase as well of getting that kind of maybe European money and what you spend, and people might be nervous about sort of our, I don't know, some of the wages we might be paying or the even the fees. And I mean, Becker didn't go, which I think some people thought they might. So we've spent a few bob, but you always keep us right on things like TV money, and we're not really spending beyond our means either, are we?
No. I guess the one thing that's hemorrhaging money for us at the moment is Becker's performances, because it feels like every time he goes in the park, he chops a million off his price tag. But I'm sure he'll sort that out in due course. But yeah, Champions League, the money for it is something that, from supporting Celtic, is always a massive thing. You know, that qualify for the group stage is ballpark 30 million euros. You know, you're talking like a few million euro for every game you win. Even if you draw a game, you're getting a million euros. And that summer spending that we had, where we were breaking records in terms of purchases and stuff like that for players, is already covered. You know, we're also, due to our performance in the Bundesliga, we'll now be one of the highest earning teams in the Bundesliga from that competition as well, because we're consistently finishing top half of the table. And it's, of course, we have a lot of big investment coming up, and we spoke about this before the end of last season about the potential investment into the Bundesliga and why the club was looking to agree to that, because it would kind of pay for the stadium expansion and things like that that we do need, the club does need, because we're not a team like Wolfsburg where they had an attendance yesterday that's lower than any attendance we'll get at the Alta Försterei all season. You know, they didn't have 22,000 at the game, but they can afford to do that because they're bankrolled. We have to do things ourselves. That's required bank loans and stuff, but I don't, it's not in any place where I think it's concerning, particularly as this sort of rate of success goes. And even if it does drop off in that, I don't think it's anything disastrous. I don't think we're risking anything by going about this way. And yeah, I guess the old saying that you have to speculate to accumulate rings true.
Yeah, indeed. We found out this week that we're almost sold out for the Braga home game. So if you're going to sell out against Braga, I know it's the first game. Are we expecting to sell out for Napoli, for example? I mean, Real Madrid's a given. I assume we'll sell out for Napoli, Baz, do you think?
Not a shred of doubt. I mean, I had a feeling that we almost had difficulties last season to sell out against Braga at the Alta Försterei. Well, not entirely, you know, but it wasn't difficult for us to get tickets, let's put it like that. And now filling the Olympic Stadium for that game, which is definitely not the most attractive, basically tells me that the hype train is in full swing, crazy. And if I were Union, I mean, maybe I'm too negative. I'm always too negative if you tell me. But depending on the results, you know, the Real Madrid game could be about basically nothing. I would put those ones on sale as quickly as possible if I were Union, just to have the money and just to sell them out. The Naples one will definitely sell out because then it will still be about something because it's, I think, the third or fourth group game. I think it's the third group game, if I remember correctly. And Naples is a brilliant, attractive team to watch as well. So I think that every football lover wants to be there as well.
And that does lead us nicely on to the Champions League and the next fixture. Might just touch on a slightly delicate topic, always one that's close to our heart, because I think we've seen away games where there's been some sort of, I think it was one of the ones in Scandinavia where there was a few kind of non-Unioner in the Union away end. What do people think of the kind of allocation of tickets for Real Madrid, first of all? I mean, the club giving tickets to journalists to be in the away end. Do you agree with it, Cherry?
No, I don't agree with that. But I think it raises some interesting questions about how the club sort of navigates this newfound interest, which is inevitably going to come with the profile of being in the Champions League and going to places like Madrid. I understand, but I raise questions as to why that journalist couldn't get, a press pass or a ticket somewhere else in the ground. And it does great because I don't think any of us here besides Mark can really claim, they've earned their stripes to absolutely, deserve a ticket for this kind of game with such a small allocation. That there are far more fans that are probably more deserving than I am, certainly, even, supporting the team for the past 10, 12 years. But yeah, there's a lot of questions around the membership, the allocation, how these tickets are doled out, and the club's still learning, right? It's very new for the club. We've only been in Europe for the past two, three seasons. We've only had this kind of interest and demand for tickets for maybe the past five or six seasons. So it's difficult, but yeah, I don't know if there is a fair way of doing it, but certainly allowing journalists into the away end isn't particularly fair in my view.
Kyle, I mean, I think you say it's pretty much impossible to get a Champions League ticket to watch Celtic away. So you end up with, I'm guessing the model there is on some kind of loyalty system and it becomes a closed shop where you just have to know people to get tickets. But then I'm assuming you still come across these hurdles, which we all did it with the Union Lottery, where our tickets sometimes personalized at some of these bigger grounds and you run the risk of you take someone else's ticket and do you get in? I mean, I've heard some great stories even in the group chat of one guy who just kind of rubbed off the name and put his own and managed to get in. He knows who he is, so well done again. But yeah, as Cherry says, no system's perfect, but is Union slightly less perfect than Or is it better than Celtic? What's your view, Kyle?
There's a balance to be found, I think, and we haven't found it yet, just as clubs like Celtic, I don't think, have found it. For Union, it's different because this, like Cherry said, this sort of demand to go to away games and stuff is fairly recent. But then you've got, we take Dawn, for example, who goes to basically every away game at this point, can't get a ticket for Real Madrid away. I think there's a bit of unfairness in that, and we've spoke amongst ourselves about the likes of cup games and so on, that there's no priority for season ticket holders and the like. However, you risk the closed shop approach, which is the case for Celtic, where you need to get a ticket for some of the game, particularly if the allocation's smaller. You need to have gone to like the last 18, 20, 25 European away fixtures to even be in with a shout of a ticket, and it's still balloted because it's just the same folks that get it. And they used to allow supporters clubs, they used to give allocations to them and allow them to dish out so new people could potentially go and stuff like that, but that doesn't happen anymore. So I wouldn't like to see us go along that way, because if you take for example someone who maybe would have been, the last time season tickets went in sale were, what, the second last season we were in the second division, and someone who was maybe 15, 16 then and support the club but maybe didn't have the means to have a season ticket would be hitting their mid-20s nearly and wouldn't have, it hasn't got access to guaranteed to go to every home game. And then for the away games that they may be able to attend, if it was kept to season ticket holders, and then those, particularly in Germany, those tickets may be passed about amongst friends and stuff like that, fans could be excluded. So I don't know what the perfect solution is. I think it would be damn hard to find one. Where we are now, it's the membership at least gives that everyone, when it goes to an away game, everyone should be equal. I don't know how many tickets go to the ultras and stuff like that, given they always seem to be there. Maybe a bit of transparency around that would help. But I don't think it's wise to become a closed shop either, because we should be an inclusive club for those who, if you want to support Union, you should have every chance to go and see Union like every other member. But yeah, I don't think there's a perfect solution.
Yeah, definitely nothing's perfect, but I think it's interesting the point about the stadium size as well, when you think of the home fixtures and what we can sell out. Baz, I know you're always someone who is very fascinated by the sort of the stadium move and things like that. Just as a quick aside before we press on to preview the Real Madrid game, what's your thoughts on the sort of size of stadium that would be kind of optimum at this point, and also thinking about the future for Union? Because it's kind of wild to think that they can sell out with Braga taking half reducing their own 5% and only taking half, we understand as well. It's pretty bonkers that Union are able to sell over 70,000 tickets for a fixture like that. As you say, it's not a glamour tie, and it did only happen last year.
I would not start with determining the size, to be honest, but it's more for me like the atmosphere of the Alte Försterei. So the parameter for me is to have a stadium that has as many terraces as possible, that has the stands that are really, 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 really close to the ground as well, which also means to have very, very steep stands. I saw one of us actually was in Valencia last weekend at Mestalla. And everybody who's ever been to Mestalla, and I think, Cherry, you've been there as well, because if I remember correctly, families living there. Mestalla is just an amazing stadium because it's so impressive because of the steepness of the stands. And then I think the ideal result for me would be to have a stadium of 40 to 50,000 people. Of course, in Copenhagen, probably 75% terraces. And then the rest, we probably need that for seats, for sponsorships, and you know, all the things that actually make the club work on a financial level as well. Close to the pitch, steep stands. That would be my optimal Alte Försterei. I think it shouldn't get and can't get much bigger than that. For the book, I talked actually to the stadium architect and the stadium buses, and he said, like, well, more than 37, 38,000 is really not possible. I studied everything. I'm, of course, as you know, stubborn as fuck. So I think there's definitely still room to expand. Let's talk about the corners. Let's talk about the main stand that could actually definitely be slightly bigger. But whatever we do, we should not lose the intimidating atmosphere of the Alte Försterei.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into Baz's stubbornness, and I don't know, next we'll be saying, well, what happened if we kind of dug out the pitch by another 20 meters and then we'd have a bit more room to play with? Then we'd have a real sort of Mestalla style Alte Försterei. But let's press on. So Wednesday evening, the 6:45 Central European time fixture against Real Madrid. Will you be watching, Jameson?
Nah, I'm gonna be doing my hair, I think. Yeah, of course I'll be watching. Of course I'll be watching. I had a bit of a panic on actually because I thought that our Johnson's Paint Trophy or whatever it's called now game was on the same day as the Real Madrid game, and then I'd have to make a really big decision: MK Dons in the JPT or Real Madrid in the Champions League. But mercifully, they're actually on Tuesday and Wednesday now, so no issue on that. It's gonna be absolutely surreal. It's gonna be one of those days that we've experienced some of. I'm not quite sure how it would classify against other teams, against your bigger teams or your smaller teams, where people look back to the big days of their history. This is the same as the German Cup against Schalke. This is the 8-0 against Dynamo. This is being promoted to the Bundesliga, that game against Stuttgart. This is beating Hertha, which is adorns, of course, our wonderful podcast avatar. All of those games, you'd say, where were you when they happened? And this time, yeah, okay, it won't be as nice as being in the Bernabeu, of course, but we can say this is the start of an adventure. What an absolutely massive game. I don't really particularly, I'm going in there with more with hope than expectation. I think if we play like we play against Wolfsburg and leave that space there, then we are going to get an absolute shoeing. Because Real play exactly that way. However, puncher's chance. We might just surprise them. You never know. Let's see. But it's going to be an immense game. An immense game.
Yeah, I mean it's 11v11, Mark, isn't it? So anything can happen, and we go with hope. If I had to ask you who you thought for Union could be the hero in a fixture like this, because let's dream. Let's say we can go and get something. Whether it's a nil-nil and it's your goalkeeper, whether it's a 1-0 and you pick your man, who do you think could really step up and enjoy an occasion like this with the crop
Big, big
Durkee.
Kevin Behrens.
Durkee
No. Big
or Behrens
Behrens.
from
It's got to be Behrens.
Sandhausen to the Bernabeu. Come on.
Yeah, that's the only way I'm seeing this going is a 90th minute break and Big Kev getting his big head on the end of something and just piling it past. Is it Arrizabalaga in the goal in Real Madrid goal at the minute? That's the only way I think we're going to get anything is that sort of scenario. We're going to break and Kev's going to finish it, but
And then whip off his top and display his muscly chest to everyone in Madrid.
yeah, they've seen nothing like it before. It's going to be
I was saying they're all that's very weedy Spanish men's bodies, isn't it? They've never seen a monster like Kev before.
yeah, action man Kev, he's going to do it. But I really can't honestly see us taking anything home, but again, I'm just being massively realistic about it, and it does seem like Mark just said, it seems like just the final step of all those other steps we've had before that felt like the absolute pinnacle. Promotion felt that way, and then the first derby and beating Dortmund in the first year felt that way, and each year we've gone a little bit higher, but this really does feel like this is the one that we have to embrace it and really enjoy it and take a step back and just think, wow, what's going on here? This is incredible. Let's enjoy it. And really the game when you think, fair enough, if we don't go there to compete and get something, we just go to enjoy the occasion, is going to be this one. But yeah, obviously, if we do, I wouldn't put it past this team to pick up something and to make things really, really awkward for them. But I just feel Jude Bellingham, Kyle mentioned him earlier. We're not looking great in the center of midfield at the minute either. So yeah, he could cause some problems.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those fixtures where the Union fans will be at the centre of everything. I think whether they're in the away end or whether there might be some in other places when you read the fan forums. So I think I just hope that we display the Union fan that I know and love, and we sing our hearts out for the lads, as we would say in Sunderland, and we do ourselves proud on the terrace. But then also we put in a stellar performance. I think that's all we can hope for. If you go away somewhere and get drubbed 5-1, but you've tried your best and you're just beaten by a bunch of world-class players, then that's absolutely fine. That's something I can cope with. I think a performance like the performance against Wolfsburg would be much harder to swallow, I think. I just really hope they don't get overawed. Are we going to see the debut for the Italian yet? Is this when you bring him in, Kyle? Is this the big game where you just go, right, don't care if you're a little bit not fit. Give me 60 minutes and let's marshal the troops. Let's make sure that if we do concede corners and our keeper's flapping, they don't get a fucking shot away because we've got a man right on the edge of the box and we're going to get this ball away.
No, I don't think he should get 60 minutes, but if we happen to sneak a goal, particularly in the second half, absolutely throw him on. I don't think, we were talking earlier about starting to play, nice football and that. I don't think playing Real Madrid is maybe the, particularly if we get a lead, is maybe the time to continue with that. Particularly if they're expecting us to try and play nice football. But on like almost contradicting myself, I don't want us to be timid. I want us to take the game to them, and not just sit back and just soak it up, because if we sit back, they will get through. They just have the quality that a player will be able to ping in a great shot from 25, 30 yards, and there we go. Yeah, it's and it's been a while since we've played a team that, benefited from state aid and things like that, with be it from the transfer of Di Stefano years ago, or the City of Madrid buying Madrid's training center and that to give them the money to create the Galacticos as they are today. It's we've done all right against teams that have benefited from state aid before. So why not dream? It's an incredible occasion. It's an incredible position to be in. It's not that long ago where we couldn't have imagined this in the wildest of dreams, and here we are on merit. So, let's go enjoy it and let's dream of, yeah, big Kev Behrens causing an upset. It's yeah, just have fun.
Indeed, indeed. Obviously, as I say, we've been contacted by the likes of The Athletic, the BBC. There'll be lots of articles around this game. One thing that came up in a conversation that I had was I actually mentioned when talking about Union, as we often regularly do ourselves on this podcast, but it rarely features in many of the articles. But I actually talked about the footballing side of Union, and I actually talked about the manager. And I actually talked about the transfer policy and living within your means. And I guess, Kyle, what you're saying there is that I mean, we're going there to present a completely different footballing model as well. So yeah, I really hope we can do some business on the pitch, but we are going as we have got there without the help of, and I don't think the Berlin State would have ever give a small club in Köpenick much of a hand up anyway, or have the money to. But yeah, we're going there and we should be hugely proud of how Union have got there. And I think, as you say, Mark, it's and you, Cherry, as well, it's one of those kind of huge milestones. I mean, we're on this journey, and as Cherry, you, me and you sort of started around that sort of similar time, sort of 10, 12 years ago, whatever. We just used to turn up, stand on the terrace. It was never sold out. You could just meet each other. It was really simple. Sometimes if you wanted to be in the ground, I don't know, 90 minutes early, you could be, but I don't really remember that we did that. We just kind of went to Boozers and then went to the game, and it was good fun. Considering where we are now, is there anything realistic that we could achieve that will outstrip this? A cup final win, maybe?
Yeah, that would be it for me, winning something. But this is it. I think this is it. When we look back, we might look back on this in 10 years and go, that was it. That was the game. That was the absolute peak. I can't see where it goes from here beyond maybe qualifying from the group, which is not beyond the realms of possibility. It's going to be really, really tough. But maybe there's something even more to come at the start of next year in the round. You know, we went into the Europa League campaign last year thinking that we weren't going to get out of that group. And then obviously we had really, really memorable tie with Ajax. So yeah, it could get even better than this. Who knows? I hope it does. But I've just got a feeling that in the history books that get written in 20, 30 years time about Union, this is going to be the game when you pinpoint it, and the home game, no matter what that result means, whether we have a chance to qualify or not. That's what we're going to look back on and go, wow, that was something else. And that was the peak. And that was as good as it got, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the one, as you say, right before the peak is actually playing it at your home, the Alta Försterei, and beating Ajax. That is kind of just below the peak. And then now we've peaked. And so, Baz, being negative, it's all downhill from here, right?
Why do I always come in for the negative part? For me, actually, a cup win would be something that is much more fitting and for our level as well, and much more of a joy and a local, I mean, like a national level thing than playing Real Madrid. I'm not sure whether that things will get worse. I don't think we will qualify for the Champions League a lot of times, but I'm actually just looking forward to getting an expanded stadium, and that the ticket situation will be a bit more relaxed, and that it's more relaxed to get all of our friends into the stadium again, and just to enjoy a lot of great matches. Because all in all, I must say that, you know, getting promoted to the Bundesliga for me was a bigger thing than playing against Real Madrid in the Champions League. That never really was a dream for me. And as we all know, going to Union has never really been about the footballing side of it, but it's definitely much more about the experience of going there with your friends and singing along and, you know, getting the vibe. So, no, I'm absolutely not negative about the future this time.
Good to hear. And Mark, as the kind of veteran of the group in terms of time served at Union, are there any sort of moments that you could kind of pick back at and go, that is really the juxtaposition? That is kind of, I remember when, I don't know, a certain fixture or something that you can kind of look back on and compare the two, and it even heightens the sort of absurdity of saying that Union are going away to Real Madrid in the Champions League?
I mean, yeah, there's lots of different fixtures that you go. That entire 1 year where we're in the Regionalliga, that was a rogues gallery of awful Brandenburg towns and villages. But if you want the real juxtaposition, I would say it's having something to play for now. That's the thing that emphasizes it so much. It's having something to play for. It's having something to play for every week in the Bundesliga that will stay towards the top end. It's having something to play for, that every point, every win, every draw in the Champions League will ultimately take us maybe on not necessarily to the next round of the Champions League, but maybe to the Europa League, where I've already made my extremely bold prediction there that's what we've got in store for the rest of our season. But what the juxtaposition is, the all those years under a selection of average trainers, all those years not necessarily fighting against relegation either. We never really did that. But all those years where we were about 10th in the league, and we're never going up or down from February or March onwards. My word, those games were dull. at the there was the odd fantastic goal. There was the odd hilarious red card. There was the odd hilarious own goal, and ultimately, this was also pre Union in English as well, where we started to meet up. And I tell you something, that there was one. I think there was one away game in against. I think it was against Hansa Rostock. And it was a mid-table game. It was unseasonably cold. It was a Friday night. It was pissing down. It had sleet mixed in. And I was just walking from the tram, and I was thinking, I've got better things to do than do this. Really, I do. And yet I still went. This is what I'm talking about with juxtaposition. We have something to play for now. And we also have the group as well, which is also an immensely important thing as well. So there's the juxtaposition.
Fantastic. And yeah, that having something to play for, I think sometimes maybe that shines through when we're frustrated at going to Wolfsburg and getting beat 2-1, because we know that, yeah, we have got something to play for now. Whereas often we go, and I think it's fair to say, Cherry, whether we won 2-1 or lost 1-0, it probably didn't really matter when you were mid-table in the second division, did it?
No, it didn't matter. And the one that sort of sticks in my head is when we went on the party train to Kaiserslautern for a 3-0 defeat in November. But again, that was the football itself was just a minor distraction, really, to the main event, which was exactly, like we've always said here, it's about meeting up with your mates and just having some structure and having a reason all to come together. But yeah, I mean, that season as well, the biggest game that season was a cup game at home to Kaiserslautern that we lost 3-0. But just to have a cup game at home, which felt like slightly more of an occasion than a league game, because like Jameson said, there was a good 5 6 year period where we really were just 10th to 14th, and maybe sometimes up to 8th, but there was just very little riding on each game, which was great in a certain sense because you could just turn up and enjoy it for what it was. But again, it just felt, the club was fairly stagnant at the time. So having a cup game in 2013 that we ended up losing 3-0 against another second division side, but that even that felt, quite big at the time. But yeah, it's really bizarre now that we have these games, and they feel fairly routine now, which is, I think, the strangest thing for me, is that it's very normal for us to talk about, the Champions League games or the European games or the, what does this next Bundesliga game mean for our chances of Europe? 10 years ago, that would have been absolutely bizarre to think about, talking about fixtures like that. But it's great. I think we should enjoy it, and let's not make it the new normal. Let's make sure we know that, we recognize where we've come from and that where we are now is pretty special.
Yeah, you really got to savor these moments. And I've had a couple of times on this podcast when you guys have spoken, I did get little goosebumps at just different mentions here and there. So let's talk a little bit before we close with some other stuff that me and Basil talk about. Let's have a little look towards the league. We've got Hoffenheim. So we play Wednesday early evening. Got to get back. Got a couple of days to prepare, and then it's Hoffenheim up at the 3:30 kickoff. Back to footballing Saturdays at home at the AF. Baz, I mean, it's got to take its toll. I mean, two away games. The Leipzig game was tough. Could be coming into this game pretty low on energy and potentially low on success. But how do you see it playing out? Have we got the squad as well to deal with this at the moment?
Well, I think we have the best squad in Union's history. So if there's any year to deal with a heavy schedule of games like this, then it is absolutely this year. I sometimes also try to see the shiny side of things, and if when we when we're on a string of, possibly three defeats, if we also lose in Madrid, that might be a massive mission as well, to just get back on track, to play at the Alte Försterei against the team there, against which we, well, at least can get a result and should get a result. So I think we've shown over and over again in the past that we can deal with situations like that. I think it's also the first time that Grisha Preubel is back at the Alta Försterei as an opponent of us, because I think last year, if I remember correctly, he was already injured, but I'm not sure. And we've got Kyle for that. Yeah, it's always good, I think, to see Preubel play. And I haven't been in the Alta Försterei for a couple of weeks because I missed the Leipzig game. So I'm just really looking forward to be, well, back at the Alta Försterei for a game.
Good to hear you slightly more positive, Baz. Kyle, how do you think will end up against Hoffenheim?
Well, it's due to quirks in the fixtures and international breaks. It's our last game at the Alte Försterei until the 21st of October, which is quite a stretch to go. And particularly in the days of the Bundesliga and stuff like that, it's not a common thing to be away from our home ground for nearly a month. World Cups in Qatar aside, I think. For Hoffenheim, their result of the weekend flattered them. They scored a freak goal from their own half because I have no idea what the cone keeper was thinking. Their third goal again was the guy could never do that again if he tried. And one thing that in their four games so far, they've conceded in every one. So I think. If we can score, and particularly if we can score early, I think we should be okay, and we can thrive on the home support that makes such a difference. And we had an off day against Leipzig, but I think we can get back and start the next run of home going without a loss at home. So I, regardless of how things go in Madrid, we've got. As I mentioned in previous podcasts, we've got key players, like we've got multiple good quality players in the key positions that we need, particularly with our wing backs and up front now as well. Hopefully, the likes of Becker and Fofana can find some form and sort of kick us on a bit. But yeah, I'm confident, regardless of what happens on Wednesday, I'm confident that we will. Get back to winning ways on Saturday if we don't happen to do it on Wednesday.
A little bit of trepidation. I wouldn't say it from Kyle's resume. It sounds like Hoffenheim had six numbers on the lotto and waking up on a big pile of money next to a supermodel. It wasn't that lucky. They did well. They put Cologne under a lot of pressure. They put the balls in the right areas. We have to stop Kramaric getting that sort of space. We let Wind have that sort of space, and look where that ended up. And Kramaric is of the same caliber, I think. The second goal, I'd like to think that Freddie won't do the kamikaze thing by running out of the box. But the finish, if you look at it, the finish from the back view. Is an outstanding finish. That's going to be on the goal of the month without a shadow of a doubt. He clips that, and it couldn't have gone any more away from the defender and into the top corner. So yeah, we've got to be on our guard. But Hoffenheim at home, followed by Heidenheim as well. With the greatest of respect to both those teams, Hoffenheim at home, Heidenheim away. Those are potential banana skins, but. Fisher and the team will be thinking 6 points there. I think to an extent it also depends what happens against Madrid as well. I can tell you this, if we beat Real Madrid at the Bernabeu, we will lose on Saturday without a shadow of a doubt. So there's your first prediction. What happens when we draw or lose? We'll have to wait and see. I'm sadly not there due to calls with cricket, unfortunately. But which means I've just checked. That's true, Kyle, that I won't see you till late October, which is absolutely shocking. Yeah. Let's hope for the best, eh?
And Jerry, before we maybe look at what came up in the WhatsApp group again when I think I mentioned Jordan and a fairly poor miss from about 3 yards out in their game when it was poised nicely at three all. You were able to come back, I think, with about another 10 players that were out and about doing their stuff at the weekend. But before you maybe give us a bit of a bit of an overview of those guys, what's your thoughts on the I mean, the Hoffenheim are fifth. They've had a decent start. It's going to be a tough game, right?
Hoffenheim for me are the Sandhausen of the Bundesliga. It's the fixture that I look at and go, I just can't get myself excited about that one. But yeah, it's true. They are annoyingly good and quite consistent, and they always seem to be in the top half of the table. So yeah, I think I'd just reflect what everyone else said, that it really depends what happens this week. We could go and put a great performance in Madrid and then have a shocker on the weekend. It would be totally fitting of the way that things seem to go with us. Yeah, I did read someone on Twitter who is lying when they said they would rather get a win on the weekend against Hoffenheim than win in Madrid. It's just, sorry, you're just showing off. There's no one in the right mind who would think that. But no, I'd take a win at the Bernabeu for a shocker against Hoffenheim, definitely.
Yeah, I think we all probably would. So apart from Jordan's glaring miss, and I watched a little bit of that game, and he looked a little bit looked like he was trying a little bit more coming into pockets and stuff, and thought he was just looked a little bit of a different player than he did with us. But maybe that was it's a good move and it's a loan deal, so we'll see if he comes back or if they end up buying him. But which other former Union players did you look at over the weekend, see what they're up to?
Well, this sort of come about as, I don't know if anyone else does this, but I just waste endless hours on a Sunday evening going through whatever live score app on my phone and going into the depths of that and seeing the results in the Luxembourg second division, whatever, and then inevitably a few names pop up that are quite recognizable. So it turns out this weekend there was quite a lot going on with Ex-Unioner. So yeah, that game, like you mentioned, Jordan scored a tap-in, but a bit of a sort of reflection of where we are as a club at the minute, where we've got two loanees out to Bundesliga sides who scored in that game. So Jordan got the first for Gladbach in their comeback, and Tim Skarkor also scored the third for Darmstadt. And then again, a reflection of where we are, that Marvin Friedrich got hauled off at half-time for Gladbach in that game when they were 3-0 down. So yeah, he's gone on to bigger and better things. Sticking in the Bundesliga, Christopher Lenz made his debut for another Bundesliga club. He got 15 minutes for them. And that was it for the Bundesliga. Now, if we go down a step...
No, it wasn't.
Sorry?
Anyway, carry on, Cherry.
Go on, correct.
No. Because it goes on to a slightly longer bit as well, by a bit. So carry on. One step down.
We'll step down to the second division, to Schalke Magdeburg, which again was another mad result. 4-3 there. Sebastian Polter scored two, the first of which was assisted by Paul Seguin. And then even more interestingly, poor Lennart Grill in goal was on the wrong side of a 7-0 hammering at Hanover for Osnabrück, where our old boy Cedric Teuscher got two and Andreas Folgersommer got one. I didn't even realise that he'd gone there, but he scored the seventh in the 90th minute just to really ram it home. And then something quite unusual where got Unioner or ex-Unioner on the wrong side of a result at the Olympic Stadium. So we had Anthony Uja, Sebastian Griesbeck and Keita Endo for Braunschweig in their 3-0 loss at Hertha, which was, quite unusual to see Unioner on the wrong side of a result there. And then Marcel Hartl got a goal for St. Pauli, the fifth. Against Kiel, against his old mate, Steven Skrzybski, who did manage to get an assist, but it was all in vain in a 5-1 loss. Then, if we jump across the pond a little bit, across the continent, Christian Pedersen got his first taste of the South Wales derby for Swansea, but he was again on the wrong side of that. Got 90 minutes in their loss against Cardiff. Over to Italy, where Joel Poyampalo scored Venezia's, Kyle pointing at his Venezia shirt there, the only goal in their win against Spezia. Slightly more recent, we've seen Milos Pantovic score for us this season. He got an assist for Eupen in the Belgian League as they lost 3-1. Over to you, Wilson, to Portugal, where our old loanee Peter Musa scored for Benfica in their 2-1 win. And the other goal scorer in that one was Angel Di Maria. So he's in quite good company there.
Indeed. Benfica fans are very excited about that signing, I can tell you.
Of course, the ex-Sparta Prague maestro. Over to Austria, where someone we didn't see too much of, but Florian Flecker scored for LASK. And he was actually assisted by Robert Jules there. So another ex-Unioner assisting one another in Austria. Someone we saw even less of was Rick van Drongelen, who got 90 minutes for Samsunspor in Turkey as they lost 4-2 against Galatasaray. Bit of a job for him there because he was up against a front three of Icardi, Dries Mertens and Hakim Ziyech. So, yeah, tough job for him there. And then the last one I found was maybe for some of the older contingent among us, but Bjorn Koplin scored for Randers in the Danish league. Obviously, his mum, Susie, is still very well connected in the club, very important member of the team. So that was only his 12th career goal as well, and he managed to get one this weekend when I was looking, especially for ex-Unioner, who had done something noticeable at the weekend. So, yeah, he's still going there at the age of 34, about 8 years after he left us. Yeah,
that was my next question. How old is he? So 34. Okay, yeah.
Still going.
Impressive stuff. And Mark, are you going to claim that Cherry's missed something after that extensive roundup of ex-Unioner?
The extensive roundup of ex-Unioner is missing one big player here. In fact, we always talk about Laufleistung, our favourite word, the amount we run. Well, the first question is, which one of, who's the highest ranked Unioner in terms of Laufleistung this year, in terms of total distance this year, without looking it up? Anyone guess? Fire names out. It's a podcast. Come on.
Alex Kral.
Kral, correct. He's number 7th in the list of Bundesliga, shortly before Diego Leitch coming in at number 8. But number 1 in Laufleistung is the one and only Leonard Maloney, ex of this parish, now playing for Heidenheim. Covered a total of 50.12 kilometres in 4 games to date, and he has played his part in Heidenheim being the strongest running team in the Bundesliga so far. So watch out in 2 weeks' time.
Wow, what a stat, and what an answer, Baz. Very impressive. Just to finish the podcast in a kind of hopefully respectful and also celebratory way of one man's life, Matty, who, just for some context, when we did one of the Berlin derbies, we got to know the guys at the kind of the fan group, the Eisener Botschafter, the Iron Ambassadors, if you want the sort of correct translation. And there was a lot of guys there who were brilliant. I mean, Andorra was the artist who many of you will know, and obviously very familiar with the design of the corner flags and everything. So the red and white sharks with the pointed teeth were what Andorra did. But Matty and all the other guys, and that's how we got to know the Swedish Unioner. So I know a few of those listen. So hello, guys. Just the Eisener Botschafter as a general group of blokes just always welcomed us at the very start as the kind of international group. And sometimes you didn't hear many English voices on the terraces and things like that. And they really supported us. Unfortunately, Matty passed away in very late August. And on Sunday at the Alte Försterei, there was a memorial service. Baz, you were there. Maybe just could tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I guess as always with these things, it was beautiful and sad at the same time. Anyone who has known Matty knows what kind of a generous person he was, and that you could always contact him and he would help you. He would be very almost Berlinish in the way of very outspoken, a very clear opinion, but he would love to tell stories about Union, about his life. There were nice words from Christian Arbeit in a very emotional statement. His wife did the same. Very, very impressive. There were a couple of acoustic versions actually of Union songs, which were just, goosebumps all over. And at the end, on the Gegengerade, I think there were 20 or 30, well, either Ultras or Eisene Botschafter that lit the Bengalos, the flares, and created a very fitting atmosphere. What's fitting in this sense, of course. I guess what makes the Alte Försterei a very special place as well is that on moments like these, that's where you get together. It has nothing to do with football, but it's just like the ground where you also collect memories like this one. My history with Matti is a very strange one because I haven't known him actually that long. I've only seen him 4 or 5 times in my life because I approached him for a book interview. And I actually visited him a couple of weeks ago in the hospice, which was my first visit to a hospice in my life. So what the fuck do you say to someone in a hospice, when you see him probably for the and yeah, for me personally, I don't know whether that belongs in a podcast or not, but it hit me very hard on Sunday. Because when I came at the Alte Försterei, you have these digital poster boards outside on the parking lot nowadays. And there was a picture of Matti that I took in November. And on the Jumbotron in the stadium, they had the same picture. And they had a print of that picture as well near the microphone stand. And of course, his wife had called me whether she could use that picture. And of course, she could. But I didn't realize that it was going to be all over the fucking place. And I can remember that I took that picture for my book in November because I was going on holiday in December and in January, and I didn't know whether Matti was going to be alive when I would get back. So I thought I have to take that picture now, and it could be like the last picture that is going to be taken of him. Thank God that didn't happen because, of course, he remained very much alive until August the 18th, when he finally passed away. And just by coincidence, his wife saw the picture because I shared it on Instagram, and then I just sent a whole bunch of 40 pictures that I took. But it kind of, as we all know, just shows how vulnerable and fleeting life can be, and that we should just enjoy every fucking minute of it, if we can. And the farewell service just had this spirit of living life to the full that Matti had very, very much. And that's why it was an unforgettable, beautiful and sad experience.
Thank you, Baz, for sharing that. And hopefully I speak for everybody who's just listened to what you've said, that I think that what you've said is definitely fitting for a podcast and hugely fitting for an Union Berlin podcast, because as we've said on this podcast, we don't, and we joked with our stickers, didn't we, Terry, about kind of you go to football, we go to Union. And the kind of joke, it was a bit of a joke and a wind up of I know a few Babelsberg fans as well, I think, wasn't it, Cherry?
Oh, it was just anyone and everyone who were incredibly jealous of what a fantastic football club we are. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. But a lot of the interviews that we've done, and I'm sure that Baz, your book was talking about it. And again, I know every football club probably thinks it, but Union does have so many facets that are about the community. And I think that for me, just those memories with the Eisner Butch after, I didn't really know anyone at the club, and they really, really helped us. And yeah, I just can't thank the whole group enough, but Matty was instrumental in that as well. So I'm glad it was a great send-off, Baz. And yeah, I think some of the sound in that may have just dropped slightly, but to be honest, I wouldn't re-record it. I would leave it in. I think it was just a little bit of the start. Hopefully you guys have all picked that up from what Baz was saying. And I think more than anything, it's about the general gist of what we're trying to get across here. So on that note, this one was for you, Matty, and I'm sure that everybody will do you and Union proud in Madrid. I look forward to coming back on the podcast to talk about that experience and that game. Und niemals vergessen, Eisen Union.